When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. All right, joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. You know, there's a reason Joe Biden has never been elected president. And I think I think this may be just a little example. And let me just paint the backdrop. He is speaking with a bunch of teenagers behind him, children, right? Okay? And he decides to go down this road. And it's amazing that we're starting this, considering everything that's happened. But here it is.
They asked me, would I like to debate this gentleman? And I said, no. I said, if we were in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him. Any guy who talked that way was usually the fattest, ugliest SOB in the room.
Mm-hmm. Well, that I would not advise that you say on stage. That was the former Vice President Joe Biden. And at 6:20 in the morning, the President of the United States, who is handling legal issues on every side of his life, has tweeted about Joe Biden. Casey, what did he say?
Well, my thanks to Willie Geist for allowing me to take over the Trump tweet reading desk.
There you go.
Morning.
Willie Geist.
He writes, crazy Joe Biden is trying to act like a tough guy. Actually, he's weak, both mentally and physically, and yet he threatens me for the second time with physical assault. He doesn't know me, but he would go down fast and hard, crying all the way. Mm. Don't threaten people, Joe.
Really? Don't threaten people, Joe.
Now, David Clark has gotten in on this ruckus as well.
No,
yes,
no.
Tweeting something about Joe Biden and gym showers and soap on a rope.
Like
and
a
it's just, no, soap on a rope and gym showers, and it's digressing.
Really?
Yeah.
You're kidding?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
Now,
well,
so can you imagine Adlai Stevenson and Dwight Eisenhower or Jimmy Carter or Gerald Ford? Can you imagine any of them?
Can you imagine George Wallace?
Right.
I mean, no, this is like this is demeaning to the term awful hack politician. And, you know, the tragedy of it is that Biden is a pretty genuine guy.
Oh, for being a corporatist.
Yeah, no, not on, look, on issues, there's a lot of things, you know, problematic. But he's a pretty genuine guy when he reacts to things. It seems pretty human, and I give him that. And if he was an outlier, it would be, you know, just Joe and how they talk about him. But it's actually, I do think it speaks to a problem in our politics right now. I think one of the reasons that Hillary Clinton got beat for president is that she tried too hard to respond to Trump as, you know, somebody who was kind of tough and edgy and stuff like that. And, you know, in that game, it never works, right? Trump relishes this stuff. This is
bottom feeder.
Right, but he relishes if anybody gets down there at the bottom with him.
Sure.
Right? And so no good comes of this. And also, I would argue, again, to Biden, to Clinton, to all these people, the way to fight Trump is as Michelle Obama said. When they go low, we go high, right? That, and to really mean it, to mean, you know, well, you're just going to present a different veteran.
Put Trump aside for just a second.
Yeah.
Biden's talking about people being fat and ugly in a day where they're trying to combat bullying.
I know. It's like, there's so many reasons why it was inappropriate. And yet, look, I'll give Biden a little bit of a pass. Because he's always been this way. You know what I mean? It's not,
well,
with all due respect.
You know, right now Fox is really struggling to avoid talking about Stormy Daniels or the other host of women
yeah.
or the president calling Vladimir Putin. He's now given them a topic for the day.
Yeah, you know, look, but they would have found another one, Sly. You know,
I understand, but you have to admit this is a pretty good one.
Yeah, it's not bad. But it would have been the mayor of Oakland or something like that. You know, I mean, they always have somebody that they're obsessed with who doesn't have the power that the guy that they don't want to criticize has. But yeah, look, here's the odd thing about Biden. Biden, I remember running an analysis in 2007 when he was running for president. I ran his voting record and his record of accomplishment against Obama and Clinton in the Senate. And it was dramatically more progressive, or at least significantly more
progressive. Wow, he got elected in 1972.
No, but it's more than that. His voting ratings from progressive groups tended to be better. You know what I mean? On balance, on the day-to-day, he was more liberal than he gets a lot of credit for. And it is because of that, because of his focus over the years on a lot of working class issues, that if he would just, you know, kind of manage himself well, he could be.
Yeah, he's in his 70s, okay?
No, I agree with you on the age totally. But you understand what I'm saying?
No, it is. I don't think being in your 70s disqualifies you for being president. I think trying to change someone's personality once they've reached their 70s,
well,
I think that's probably not going to happen.
Well said. Well said. But it's just odd because, you know, he did call the Conor Lamb thing right. He went in and, you know, it's significant. He's the one guy who went into that district, was able to go in, present well. It worked, right? And so I give Biden...
Oh, yeah. He went to Alabama, too.
Right. Yeah. He's got, in many ways, the right touch and the right, you know, instincts. But he can't... You know, things like this are just what just put people... You know, people are looking at, yeah, wow, maybe you ought to move Biden over into that column of possibles. And then you're like, meh.
No. You know, no. In 2010, he came here to campaign for Russ Feingold and ended up getting in a fight of the manager at a Gilly's Frozen Custard. Called him a smart ass or something.
Oh, shit. Well, the famous one. Remember the wonderful one where, you know, he was talking about the guy in the wheelchair?
Oh.
No, yeah. The guy was, he said, yeah. Stand up for Russ. Yeah. Bless you.
You know, but that's inadvertent. This was so beyond belief.
Fly.
Yeah.
You really, you're analyzing this wrong. It's all inadvertent. You know, you're thinking there's a lot of thought that goes into this.
All right, let's
tell you, it isn't.
All right, this is an amazing story.
A congratulatory controversy escalating tonight after President Trump's call to Russian President Vladimir Putin on his re-election win. A vote derided by election observers with stuffed ballot boxes, virtually no competition. It's why the president was explicitly warned by his top advisors not to congratulate Putin, according to the Washington Post. A briefing note in all caps reading, "Do not congratulate." So what happened?
I had a call with President Putin and congratulated him on the victory.
The White House, now furious that this leaked. Two sources familiar with the discussion tell NBC News Chief of Staff John Kelly is frustrated and deeply disappointed with the disclosure. The president defending himself tonight, blasting his predecessors for not being smart enough or energetic enough to develop a good relationship with Russia. Quote, "The fake news media is crazed," he tweeted, "because they wanted me to excoriate Putin. They are wrong. Not everyone agrees."
And people are surprised by this? This is the least surprising thing in the world.
I was like, I mean, good luck with people that want to make an issue of this, okay? And more power to him. I think that the subtlety of not listening to your staff is a really big deal. It's worthy of discussion. It's worthy of focus. Do you know, you tell me, Sly, how much is this going to move the needle with Trump backers?
Oh.
Or even with, probably with swing voters.
Listen to what he said during the campaign in 2015 and 2016.
I'd get along very well with Vladimir Putin. I just think so. People would say, what do you mean? I think I'd get along well with him. Obama and him, he hates Obama.
He's running his country, and at least he's a leader, you know, unlike what we have in this country.
No, but again, he kills journalists that don't agree with him.
Well, I think our country does plenty of killing also, Joe. So,
in all fairness to Putin, you're saying he killed people. I haven't seen that. I don't know that he has. Have you been able to prove that? Do you know the names of the reporters that he's killed? Because I've been, you know, you've been hearing this, but I haven't seen the name.
He is really very much of a leader. I mean, you can say, oh, isn't that a terrible thing he called him? I mean, the man has very strong control over a country. Now, it's a very different system, and I don't happen to like the system, but certainly in that system, he's been a leader far more than our president has been a leader.
You know, for Trump supporters, many of them the most hardcore, they have Vladimir Putin in higher regard than Elizabeth Warren.
Well, the polling shows, polling shows that there's been this, like, weird shift, which really shows the flexibility of our Republican conservative friends. But, no, there's another element of this thing as well, and that is that, and I know I harp on this a lot, but I think it's an important thing to understand. We don't have the media in America that we had 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, where you, even as flawed as it may have been, if you were to pick up the Duluth News Tribune or the Des Moines Register or the Milwaukee Journal, you know, even 20 years ago, you'd have a lot of international stories on the front page treated very, very seriously, right? And same with the evening news. It would be, you know, the world would be much more in perspective than it is today. Today, because we've, you know, reduced our newspapers to, you know, thin shreds, radio is just, you know, Rush Limbaugh, talk radio, basically, you know, and TV is essentially weather reporting with, you know, a little bit of Trump around it. I think people have far less perspective on the world today than they did 20, 30, 50 years ago. And admittedly, you had a Cold War that also gave some shape to that and some sense of it, for better and for worse. And so my sense is that a lot of the people who are criticizing Trump for being complimentary toward Putin are missing a subtlety here. Most Americans know very, 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 very little about Putin. Putin is a bad player. I mean, as the challenge there, he said, yeah, he kills journalists and, you know, and the stuff that's happening in Britain right now. But I don't think that our media, by and large, does a good job of putting that, and I mean our popular media, not you doing what you do, or not, frankly, you know, some very, very serious journalists are trying hard to do this. But the overall content isn't there. And so you end up with a situation where Trump has scoped out a vision here. And this goes back to his campaign. It is a vision of a strongman leader. And that's if it's in the Philippines, if it's in China, if it's in Russia. It's like he likes the guy who is, like, really in control. And as we talk about that, that's or these issues. This is what we should focus on. We shouldn't be focusing as much outward, although I think we should have much more coverage of the rest of the world. But we should also be focusing on why does he like these guys? And what does this tell us about Donald Trump and the political party that has aligned with him, the Republican Party, which has now become an extension of Trumpism? I mean,
so
I don't mean to keep
extrapolating
here, but I think it finally gets us to a person like Paul Ryan. And ask how can Paul, I know, the formerly significant person, but how can Paul Ryan, looking at the realities we have, you know, that we're discussing right here, an American president who seems to be rather obsessed with strongmen, how can Paul Ryan continue to shore this guy up and basically be an amen corner for him and cheering him on?
What's the future for people like this? This is Ben Sasse, Senator from Nebraska.
Vladimir Putin is not a friend. Vladimir Putin is a despot. The President of the United States was wrong to congratulate him, and the White House press secretary was wrong to duck a simple question about whether or not Putin's reelection was free and fair. And yesterday, when the White House refused to speak directly and clearly about this matter, we were weakened as a nation, and a tyrant was strengthened.
Those are pretty strong words.
It's fantastic. You know, I mean, even if you disagree with him, even if you don't, you know, even if you're not on board with you know, Ben Sasse on every aspect of what he says or on every issue, that a member of a political party would call out his own party's president and his own party's White House so bluntly and aggressively, that harkens back to what, you know, the American experiment was supposed to be about. You know, ideas, values were supposed to matter more than rank partisanship.
Well, can you remember the last time you heard someone from their own party say that the president of the United States in their party had weakened the country?
Yes, absolutely. Wayne Morris, Ernest Greening, Gaylord Nelson, others in the 60s offered, if not precisely the same words, strikingly blunt criticism of Lyndon Johnson for leading us into the Vietnam War. It's happened. And can I also note, although, again, not as bluntly, maybe not as aggressively, but also because of lack of coverage, people are less aware. You look at what Russ Feingold said in the 1990s about the War Powers Act and some of the things that were happening in the Balkans. He was very blunt. And the great congressman from Texas, Henry B. Gonzalez, used to call out Democrats and Republicans.
All right.
On some of these war and peace issues. So we did have a history of it.
Well, it is. The one thing, though, that's different in this case is that a lot of people are really starting to ask the question. You know, obviously Lyndon Johnson thought what he was doing was best at the time, whether it was... Well, but he was not under suspicion for collaborating with the foreign power.
No. He was thought to be dumb in that regard, but not... And similarly, by the way, when Nixon went to China, when Nixon went to Russia in the early 70s, people like John Ashbrook, the congressman from Ohio, and William F. Buckley and others were very, very critical of him. But the weird part was, of course, it was all in the context of the phrase, Nixon went to China, right? Here was this virulent anti-communist going to negotiate. You didn't think he was collaborating. You thought he was trying to, you know,
right,
find some sort of common ground.
Yeah, that's quite a distinction here. Let's take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at Sly'sOffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep Sly'sOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from Sly'sOffice.com.
We're back at Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like the Axley Law Firm, Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, and our friends at St. Vincent de Paul. All right, so there's a lot going on. I didn't even know that Cambridge Analytica existed. Interesting piece in the Washington Post talking about just how dangerous this company is and how they've affected elections all over the world in places like Kenya, where they're a real threat to democracy.
Yeah, I mean, if you had read my book, Horsemen of the Trumpocalypse, you would have found a substantial section on Cambridge Analytica. Written a year ago, because the fact of the matter is that Cambridge Analytica was brought to the United States, you know, kind of inserted into American politics by several people, but especially by the Mercers, these billionaires live out on Long Island and who, you know, were running Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway, who still have, by the way, huge hooks into the Trump White House right now. And remember, that's an important thing to understand. People that played the absolutely essential role in the election of Donald Trump to the presidency continue to have significant influence with the Trump White House and right in through Kellyanne Conway, who was their, you know, one of their people. They were all over Cambridge Analytica and not in a unsophisticated way. Remember that Robert Mercer is considered to be one of the geniuses of all sorts of technological innovations and use of information, use of data. So, I mean, we need to understand that this is a real thing. Now, one of the things that is true about Cambridge Analytica is they're not always as good at what they do as they try to sell themselves as. So a lot of analysts early on were saying, yeah, they claim to be able to do this. They claim to be doing this. But really, there's a lot of evidence that it's just, you know, a way to make money. It's a way to fool people, right, into buying into them. Now what we're getting, and this is the important thing in the moment we're in, we're getting increasing evidence of two things. One, that their claims may have been more legit than people thought a year or two ago when people were first starting to look at Cambridge Analytica, that there was more going on than people imagined because of this accumulation of data. B, that that this is sort of a trajectory. This is something that all sorts of people are racing to get good at. And when you understand that, if you step away from this one company and this one campaign, this campaign, and look at it broadly, this is the direction our politics is headed, and we ought to all be really, really concerned.
Well, if you were to take, if you were to go back and take the first part of our conversation where you were talking about that we don't have a national media that's covering this or covering that, yeah. It's the Wild West now because people are getting their information off Facebook.
You can fill the void. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And do you know that I don't do Facebook? Never have. Neither does Bob McChesney, my co-writer on media issues. When it was rising up, it was pretty, I don't want to, you know, be too blunt about this, but it was pretty obvious that two things were going to be realities of Facebook. Number one, it was going to be a massive time suck, right? If you're on Facebook, you're going to spend a lot of time there.
Guilty. And guilty.
Everybody is. You know, it's a reality. But because it was a massive time suck, it was going to collect unimaginable amounts of data. It would become the data suck as well. Time suck, data suck. And the critical thing is the way they would make their money was going to be by packaging and selling that data and access to that data and access to what they're doing. And that's why when this Cambridge Analytica stuff came out, their stock just, you know, took this deep dive, because anybody who's a serious analyst of what's going on knows exactly what we're talking about here. What Facebook does is treat you as copper in the ground. They mine you, right? And then they process it and package it. Sometimes they do it in the raw. Sometimes they do it in a more sophisticated way. Sometimes they do it through other vendors, other facilities. But the bottom line is they're selling you, right?
Ooh, I feel so dirty.
You should feel dirty. Yeah. What they're doing is a really bad thing. And it needs to be understood as such, and it should also be understood that when I listen to people, you know, trying to mount defenses of Facebook, a lot of them are former Obama administration aides and relatively liberal Democrats and stuff like that, because the fact of the matter is that, you know, this obsession with data, this obsession with gathering people's data for free, right, having people give it to you, and then selling it to somebody for a lot of money, or packaging it in a way that you make a lot of money. This is, in a non-productive world, right, a world that's doing less and less making things, at least in the United States, and more, you know, moving data, moving money, this is a way to make a lot of money.
So Rush Limbaugh,
it's not a way to make a good democracy.
As I was driving back from Canada on Monday, I was listening to Rush Limbaugh, and he immediately started deflecting this story, and you could tell he was concerned about it. Okay. He was deflecting it to Barack Obama, and I don't know, he took a quote from Maxine Waters, you know, where she talked about that the Obama team was so successful with data that, you know, no Democrat would ever lose again. Of course, that turned out to be wrong.
Yeah, Jim Carville was from
what I understand, the difference between Barack Obama and Donald Trump is that in this case, the data was stolen. Is that correct?
No, there's a lot of differences. I mean, that's one. And I mean, I don't know. What do you mean by stolen? Right? You mean that. An agency, an entity, Facebook, that collects up a tremendous amount of data and allows people to get in there for all sorts of different reasons, had it end up being used for something other than what they initially intended? Is that what you're calling stolen? Because if it is, that's everything that happens with Facebook. Right. You know what I mean? It's like people are getting data and they're using it for all sorts of other things. And if you think this is the Wild West. Now, admittedly, there are some, I shouldn't say everything that happens with Facebook, there are some, you know, relatively more legitimate uses. But what you need to understand is that what's being described as stolen, and it was stolen. I agree, it was. But the initial theft is from people who don't know.
Correct.
Their data is being taken for this. But here's the other thing that's the difference between Obama and Trump, and this is a huge, huge deal. The Obama campaigns in 2008, especially in 2012, used data in sophisticated ways, but they used it for fundraising primarily. That's how they raised immense amounts of money. And it was a little bit, it was aggressive. There's no question of that. They would find out, you know, how old you were, what your gender is, where you live, and what your concerns and fears are. They would look at who you donate to. Do you donate to Planned Parenthood? Oh, good. So when we do a fundraising appeal to you, we're going to say, if Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan win, they're going to ban abortion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was targeted fundraising, and it was very sophisticated. What the Trump campaign, either directly or through its ancillaries, was to take it a next step and go to a much more aggressive, in a much more aggressive manner, directly toward potential voters. And they took the worst of television advertising, which is it wasn't going to potential voters for the purpose of animating them, getting them excited, getting them to go vote for your candidate. It was going to them to suppress their vote, to make them not want to vote.
All right, real quick before we go, spring election primary in Illinois. Your thoughts on J.B. Pritzker and Bruce Rauner and Dan Lipinski?
Well, look, it was a mixed result from Illinois. I hope I never let anybody doubt that my sympathies in the governor's race in Illinois were more toward Daniel Biss or Chris Kennedy than J.B. Pritzker. Pritzker is much more closer to the Democratic establishment in the state and spent an unimaginable amount of money.
$70 million.
Yeah. With that said, I don't know if you listened to Pritzker's victory speech.
Well, it was quite progressive.
It was strikingly so. And so it's going to be a very interesting thing with Pritzker. He's better than Rauner. And, you know, the fact that he's going to run on legalizing marijuana is, you know, an interesting
thing. Well, and much like Connor Lamb, he was touting unions.
Really touting unions. And a whole host of progressive issues, immigration, all sorts of stuff. So I think Pritzker, one thing you have to take in, is that sometimes you have these, you know, billionaire players who you're not overly thrilled with, and you're not particularly thrilled with how they came up, right? Who are influenced by the politics of the moment, who are actually more willing to listen to what people want than some of your traditional politicians. And that's certainly true of Phil Murphy, the new governor in New Jersey, another very wealthy guy who, frankly, not only ran but is serving so far as a quite progressive governor. So I think that there's, you know, in Pritzker you take that or you leave it there. On the Lipinski race, that was just a, you know, last gasp for the South Side Chicago machine. They're Dan Lipinski, who is a, you know, not a very good Democrat on a whole host of issues, but is it relatively in touch, I think, with some of his district, was, you know, it comes out of the Chicago machine and was still able to generate a victory there by about, you know, a small number of votes, 1,500 or so, over Marie Newman, who was a favorite of the progressives. I think Lipinski's day will be done soon as you see a transition. It's a generational change. I'd love to see the demographic vote breakdown on that vote. But, interestingly enough, in other parts of the city of Chicago, and this is a big deal, much undercovered because our media tends to undercover the politics of rising communities, in the Hispanic community in Chicago.
Chuy Garcia?
It wasn't just Chuy. His slate won. He had candidates running for him, with him, for the Cook County, you know, Board of Commissioner, you know, which is, Cook County Board is an incredibly powerful entity.
Yeah, a couple big names went down out of the machine.
And that's the second largest county in America, right after Los Angeles County. I mean, that is a big, big deal entity. And Chuy Garcia, who has fought the machine in Chicago, going back to the, you know, early 80s when he was one of the lonely backers of Harold Washington, he ran with a slate. His slate won county board seats. They also got rid of the county assessor, who was the chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party. That'd be the equivalent of beating, you know, Mayor Daley at his peak, right? or something very similar. And that ought to be noted, because there is a there's a reform impulse coming out of especially, you know, the Hispanic community, some of the African-American community, that's quite encouraging. And
I would imagine Mayor Emanuel took note of that.
I certainly hope he did. And, boy, if he looked at those numbers, the only lesson he could take away from them is that he really might want to be looking for another form of work.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.